remind those of you that are not aware of it, that last week was the anniversary of the public hearings. Yes. For those of you that are unaware, this committee has been sitting for more than a year. And it's somewhat unusual for an ad hoc committee. But that is the nature of the work that we are tasked with. There has been tremendous interest in the bill. There were some very important and very convincing arguments that were placed before the committee in the public hearings. And I think as time went along, and as members absorbed and contemplated the representations that were made at the public hearings, and also subsequent engagements, documents that have been forwarded to committee members, I think we are beginning to find our way, and a number of very, very important proposals have been tabled, particularly to deal with the very, very important concerns that have been raised by the public out there. I just want to say, because this thing is almost always misrepresented, when the people at large are informed what really is going on here. I've said this in the beginning, this is a parliamentary process. It is not a process whereby we walk into the committee room and walk out with a bill. Public hearings are specifically there to inform the committee, to inform parliament about what really is the concerns out there. And these concerns are always very seriously considered, and that really is what has been taking place here. That is what has resulted in all the time that we have spent on the bill. And for those of you that serve on other committees, you will know. Also, those of you that have served on other ad hoc committees, you will know that a considerable amount of time has been spent on assessing, on analyzing, and on dealing with this bill so that we get the thing right. I doubt whether we will be able to please everybody. It seems not to be that type of law that is going to please everybody once it has been finalized. But we have come a long way, and as time has gone on, a number of alterations have been made, and particularly one of the big breakthroughs, I think, is to limit the bill, the application of the bill. While that is still work in progress, I think the principle, those agreements are there, which was a very, very serious concern by many people out there, that the bill was applying to all organs of state, and that that might be an invitation to encourage those out there to perform corrupt acts. But I think you have heard the ANC say this before. I remember particularly in the last sitting, that Mr. Landers was very clear that we are not here to produce a bill to forward corruption in the public sector. I think Mr. Landers was also clear from the ANC point of view that the ANC has taken a stance, and that no way, under no circumstances, are we here to forward a bill that is going to protect corrupt acts or unlawful acts. And whatever you say out there as a media, please don't misrepresent that for me. That is a standard, and I think I speak now for the whole committee. Nobody wants to see this bill being abused so that corrupt officials or people in the public sector might get away with those things that we all do not agree with. Having said all those things, honourable members, welcome. I hope you are refreshed. I hope you are ready to put in some good hours of work. Your country is asking you. things, but I think we must accept such as things are. It is not always possible to get total consensus, and we will differ on things, and the bill will go through one day, and there will be some unhappy people. But largely, I think those unhappy people in the beginning are now beginning to come to understand that the parliamentary process is a process where the people participate in, and where politicians such as us listen to what you have to say. And unlike what I sometimes read in the media, it's not true. We do listen to what you have to say, and you only have to look at what we have done. Look at what we have done. Look at the changes that we have made. And as much as you don't like some of them, and as much as you don't like some of the things that have not been dealt with, this is an ongoing process. I cannot tell you what the situation might be like on Friday, because there are new ideas put on board. And so we have to respect the process. It's work in progress. But in principle, a number of good things have been said here to address the concerns that you, the public, have raised. We are unfortunately not going to have some members with us here today. The Honourable Kutsiers apologise. The Honourable Jacobus
year ones came in last. And I just hope that they've all come in within the last day or two. I just hope it has been possible to secure attendance for presentation by those submittants. But there is no question that we must take those submissions. The parliamentary process must follow the proper procedure. And therefore, let me express my appreciation for the fact that you are postponing tomorrow's meeting till 4 p.m. I would imagine 4 p.m. would be all right, but if you will indulge us if anything unpredictable happens, thank you.
Yes, also from our side, thank you, Chair. It affects a number of us on the committee. I presume we will be relatively open-ended then from 4 o'clock on. We prepared to sit as long as it is necessary, but I suppose members do need an indication of that for transport purposes. It doesn't affect me, but for members that need transport, if we sit late 10, 11 o'clock, I don't know what the intention is for tomorrow from 4.
have this large body of documentation and information that has never been, whose classification has never been reviewed. In an informal discussion with the former Minister of Intelligence and now Minister of Defense, she confided in me that this bill should have been just dealing with the declassification of that large body of apartheid era classified documents. They're there, they need to be dealt with. You can't just declare them declassified. There has to be a proper process put in place that ensures legality. Okay. So we have the classification review panel, which is going to play an important role in that regard. Members of the Democratic Alliance, the African Christian Democratic Party, and the Inkatha Freedom Party put forward their ideas on the classification review panel. And we've given careful attention to their document. And we find favor with a lot of the ideas that flow from their document. I think there's agreement that there must be 5 members of the classification review panel chairs. We agree that 5 members must be form part of a public interview conducted by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. The Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, when it interviews people for the position of the Inspector General, does so in an open forum where the media are present. So they're quite capable of getting up this bit of work as well. I think there's agreement that the members of the panel must be South African citizens. And then we say that they must be suitably qualified. At least one of them must have expertise in the Constitution and the law. At least one of them must have an understanding of national security matters. And at least one of them must have an understanding of archive-related matters. Okay. The person who chairs the panel, we believe, must be have a
opposed to full-time in this because of the budget, but it depends on the volume of work. If we're looking at the fact that there hasn't been such declassification taking place, we'd have to look at that as well. So thank you, Chair, and thank you for the submission from the majority party side.
Thank you, Chair. I share the view of the Honourable Swartz. I think that that we are close. I wonder if the Honourable Landers would just clarify whether it is indeed his view that the Justice Committee should play no role in this panel, and if so, if he could explain why he holds that view. Also on the question of vetting, we have disagreed about this in the past. Honourable Landers has said that he believes that the panel should be vetted, but he will recall that during our conversation there was a discussion about different kinds and levels of vetting. What does he have in mind? Finally, if you recall our conversation, there was the question of what powers would the panel have, and what would the panel do in the event of discovering non-compliance. I wonder if the Honourable Landers would perhaps talk to these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Listen, I just want to address the issue of the involvement or non-involvement of the Justice Committee. The argument that we had in and discussion that we had in ANC around this issue is why the Justice Committee, then why not the Defence Committee, Police Committee, and every other committee that is involved within the security trust and that might be affected by this bill. And for that reason, and because classification in the end is going to be dealt with by the Intelligence Committee, we thought, since it's an open process, let's leave it. We all see how difficult it is for committees to have joint meetings and joint hearings. Let's leave it with the Joint Committee of Intelligence.
Yeah, Chair, Annalise has put a thumb on it. That's one of the reasons why we think it'll be messy if you try and rope in one of the other committees of Parliament.
if you become mad while you're a panelist, then obviously it kicks in, and out you go. So, but really, to come back to me seriously, try and look at how the panel is going to work. Its role is becoming ever more important, and you'll see why when we deal with clauses 21 and 22. I'm sure that people who drafted them had no idea that the panel was going to end up in the form that it is now, and we're not quite finished with it yet. So, yes, we stand by the vetting. There's nothing wrong with it. All you do is when you advertise for nominations, put in the advert that whoever accepts being interviewed will be vetted. That's it. So if you don't want to be vetted and your name is put forward, then please tell the people concerned that, look, really, I'm not interested. Simple as that.
Yes.
That's how it works. So, Chairperson, those are just some of the issues that we raise. So, the intention of the annual report is that it serves eventually before Parliament. There's no problem there. Don't complicate matters by involving other committees unnecessarily.
Members, before you go ahead, let me just remind those that are not aware, the members of the JSCI, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, are all vetted. They have to have a top secret clearance. Hence, there would be no difficulty with them dealing with situations that might have to be in camera. I don't think that is what is intended, but there may well be such situations. I don't think that Parliament is looking at a situation where members of the Justice Committee should be vetted just for the single purpose of dealing with this. Or members of another committee should be vetted just for the single purpose of having to involve themselves in something which they presently are not involved in, which is not really going to be a large section of their work. But if they are going to, they're going to have to be vetted. I don't think you would be interested in going through that very, very stringent vetting process that members of the JSCI go through. Just on this mad situation that you raised, Honourable Landers, it said here that you can't be a member of this.
You may not be appointed.
Yeah, you can't be appointed, and I'm not worried for my own reasons. It says if it has been declared by a court to be mentally ill,
yes,
or disordered, is that mad?
Mm. I'm informed reliably that it means you're mad.
Mentally ill, so it creates quite a high threshold for if I have water on the brain, am I not being too ill?
Well, I don't know, Chair. You'll have to convince
me. I might judge. I might not be mad, I might just have some infection on the brain. Is that not mentally ill? I'm not sure who you're trying to restrict here. Are you satisfied? You the ones that you don't want?
I'm looking forward to the interviews and the questions that the honourable members will pose to the nominees, Chairperson. I'm going to make sure I'm sitting there in the gallery and listening.
You see, the problem is now, and quite seriously now, you are restricting this to the people that have got the court order saying that they're mad. What about those that don't have the court order? So signs of madness is not something you want.
because disorder can be guilty of disorderly conduct, and I think most MPs are guilty of disorderly conduct on occasion. Chair, the issue relating to the Justice Committee, it's not a major issue I think that we can look at, but I think the reason why we proposed it was because of the harmonisation between this legislation and PIA, and the role that the Minister of Justice and the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development plays in looking at the implementation of PIA legislation, which is, as we know, the Access to Information Act, and which plays a very intrinsic role and is to be harmonised with this legislation. But we do appreciate that
well, we could look at the offences. Do you know they're going to be there anyway? That doesn't address the work of the panel yet. Your other answer, I find interesting, that the relevant committees of Parliament will in fact, of course, be seized with whatever reports the panel eventually. But that's not our concern. Our concern is this. Now, there are these five people. They are going to check for compliance with classification criteria on the basis of random sampling. What do they do when they find on a random sample that people have not complied with our section 15 or 13 classification criteria, which by our mutual agreement is now quite a nice piece of work? What happens when they find that? Do they then say, now I'm going to do a broader sampling to see whether there is a systemic problem? Do we, in order to ease their task, do we require upfront that people who classify in the security department do written reasons for classification in each instance? I think it used to be in the 2008 bill, it's gone out. It will make it easier. Make the panel's job easier and force people to apply their minds. Okay, so if we agree written reasons, that should come in somewhere in clause 15 or whatever. All right, now they find there is possibly a systemic problem. What is it that we expect them to do at that point? Must they at that point go have a meeting with the classifying authority? Must they come to the relevant parliamentary committee? But more crucially, do they set aside the misclassification? Do they substitute their own decision? Now, I mean, these are the administrative justice questions that automatically arise because they have a review function. So you have to answer the PACA question. And Chair, I would be so indebted if you would perhaps want to ask the State Law Advisor's Office. Mr. Makabene is with us today. Not only Mr. Makabene, hello. But if you would ask the State Law Advisor's Office to look at that for us, as a matter of constitutional law, whether, you know, what are the administrative justice implications? But secondly, from our point of view, surely just for purposes of practicality, if you find that police intelligence has misclassified, what happens next? The panel presumably says to the relevant general, you are misclassifying. Let me come and see all of your classifications. Don't forget that the way we've written this bill now, they have, each time you classify, you have to notify. You have to notify the panel. I have classified 10 things or whatever. Does the panel then go talk to the relevant general and say, here's one instance, Mr. Clawmore shaking. Does it go and say to the panel, here's a systemic problem, why are you people not complying with clause 15? Does it set aside? And it goes beyond that, Chair, because if you look at section 2, the regular reviews of classified information, which they are also required to look at, these are the ones that happen every 10 years. When conducting a review, the head of an organ of state, as it now is, but the head of a security department then, must apply the criteria for the continued classification. That's the clause 21 you want to talk about. The criteria for continued classification are more stringent, quite rightly so, more stringent than the section 15 one. So in that case, the panel would be testing again on a sampling basis whether they've complied with a stricter criteria. If not, why not? What is it we want them to do? Do we want them then to go and inspect? Do we want them to set aside? Do we want them to substitute their own decisions? In other words, strike off the classification, in which case they would then declassify. And then just a last thought, Chair. The question that Llewellyn raised, the one that we have previously raised, the one that he tells us Lindiwe Sisulu was seized with. What are we going to do with all of the information classified between December 1996 and up to this date, one presumes? want the panel to do it, because it's a mess of information. Yeah, no, it's a question. It certainly could be a job for the panel. Alternatively, who else? I don't know who.
Honourable Phil Vink.
The chairperson, I just wanted to address the issue of the vetting of the five people who are going to serve on the first board or declassification body. The fact of the matter is, I think I would urge opposition members also to give careful consideration to it. There's no way that we can't vet these people. You know, they are going to work with top secret documents. You are going to ask them to have a look at this. You want them to have access to departments and to departments' documents and not have that as a loophole for departments to say no. The fact of the matter is, vetting is something that takes place, and I don't think one must see this as a political loyalty or something else. It's vetting is about whether this person is of good character, whether this person is a security risk for the country, etc., etc. Even the state law advisors sitting here are vetted. And I think we really need to be a bit more open-minded about the concept of vetting. What might happen to you is that you struggle in 25 years' time to get a visa to Canada, like I did, but that's brilliant. So really, I really think we should be a bit more open-minded when we think what it means to say that you vet somebody. And maybe it would be good, chairperson, for all of us if we can get an explanation on what vetting actually is, so that people don't see this as this big threat and this party loyalty that it presumes, because it's not that.
The Honourable Fichler and then the Honourable
Venue Chair. Chair, I just wanted to respond to Honourable Mané. You know, on the question of justice.
other thing with the Honourable Lord has now read, yes, I had in fact read Clause 19 as one intended to deal with the bulk of the MIS stuff. And as you rightly say, everything classified since 82. Although that had more than before. Although those at least had the virtue that they were classifying for security related. The problem with the MIS is in law, as a matter of law, what happened in practice, I would be the last to know. But as the problem with the MIS, you know, on the version of the previous ministry, the problem with the MIS is that it applied across the board, not all government departments, and also some institutions outside. Therefore, now, must I read Clause 19 as follows? The organ of state that classified information is responsible for its declassification and downgrading. That means, for example, that education or health or whatever, each department is now going to have given help us workshops. We never stop training and workshopping in this guy. I suppose each department is going to have an instruction session on what the new law allows to be classified and what not, in contradistinction to what was allowed under the MIS, which was any damn thing. There were no criteria. So they would need those instructions. Then they must sit down and start working through their enormous amounts on the Castro's version. All right. Then the head of the organ of state is the declassification authority, the DG, as the case might be. But my delegate authority to declassify and downgrade. All right. Head of organ of state retains accountability. Now, here comes the agency. The agency is responsible for the handling of classified records and declassification of a defunct organ of state. Which would be our defuncts? No, but those departments are still there. Their successors in title are there. A lot of them aren't. Departments. What do we call ministers? All right, okay. All right, okay. But the post-94 departments, I mean, they change the words every so safety and security instead of intelligence, but the departments are still there. So the agency being the NIA and the Secret Service must now handle us. It's really going to be the old stuff. Because now, you see, let me just give you one reaction. We know that under the MIS, it was precisely the NIA and the state security that went around advising, inspecting, monitoring, and auditing the classification that all these departments did. That's what it says in the MIS. And so they already have a quite considerable knowledge of everything that's been classified in education or in health or in local government, blah, blah. So is it the case that we are going to expect them? At least they're there. I accept that. They're there. They exist. They have been working in the field. They've been doing the classification. Now we want them to go and do the declassification. And perhaps there is nobody else can do it. Mr. Gilmore is agreeing most enthusiastically. But perhaps there is no one else to do it. But how confident must I be that the same people who classified, monitored, ordered, and controlled are now going to declassify in according to the new ethos? Is the answer, and forgive me for doing a little bit of thinking about, is the answer the very fact that the panel will then go into step prove and random sampling? It is. One of them. Okay. Is now going to shrink. So then how are we going to control what this bookery gets up to with the declassification? That's the next question then. How do we... I think our spokesperson and president can answer me, but I've always had the impression that they integrated seamlessly the old order intelligence and the new order intelligence people. And I don't discount the importance of the role they played in transition. They really did on both sides. But, you know, I mean, it's also, it stands to reason that when people who work in secrecy integrate seamlessly, that you must be careful about what they may not wish to discuss. They have a different mindset.
having to deal with what happened in the past is a matter which I think presently, as the review panel is going to be dealing and overseeing that process, I think the intelligence, the agency, more than anybody else, is presently in the best position to deal with that, given that you don't know what you are dealing with in any event. I certainly wasn't around at the time when classification was taking place on the apartheid era. I wasn't there when they classified. So who knows what they did, but they might have. One expects there to be some very, very sensitive pieces of information. And who other than your National Intelligence Agency or your state security is going to be in the best position to deal with that? But I think I think that really, with all due respect, honorable members, is really a sideshow in terms of what we're trying to achieve. We want a lawyer to take us forward. That's what we want. We want a lawyer that's going to be consistent with our constitution. It's not going to be unconstitutional. It's going to be very restrictive. That really is what we are trying to do. Unfortunately, we have to take into consideration information that has been classified in other areas, and we are not going to create the perfect system for that. But I think the way it's structured now with the review panel, looking at what your agency is going to do in terms of classification or reclassification and declassification of that old material, I think it's nothing wrong at the moment. Honourable members, can I hear you, Honourable Smuts, on your non-compliance? What did you have in mind? What is that non-compliance? What happens if the review panel was
I'm framing them as questions, and I'm not ready to put anything down in print. That's why I was so hoping that Ms. Boyce and Mr. Bakabeni might do us a little opinion. But I mean, I think. And Mr. Wilson, I know, doesn't look enthusiastic, but surely if you have had five people applying their minds, they have now found instances of classification that doesn't comply, whether it's a single one or whether it's systemic and there are 10 or 20, neither here nor there. Surely those people who, after all, we have selected for their sanity and their relevant skills, surely they must at that point be the ones who say, we set this classification aside. What do they do then? Do they send back to the classifying authority, say, reapply your mind and send back to us so we can see whether you're doing this right? Is that not essentially the same as setting aside? You don't want them to substitute their own decision. You want to send back and then back to the panel. Yeah, but it says it in a completely different context. That's before you excellently invented the panel, which we embellished for you. No, really. All right, so you want to send back? Right. Chair, is there something that Ms. Boyce and Mr. Bagavini want to say? No, I just feel genuinely one must offer the opportunity. Because it's... Yeah. No, she looks like she wants to say that.
The Honourable...
Chair, I mean, it seems to, we seem to have agreement that, I mean, we're on the basis of the Rand
laws are, and to prevent them being a toothless organization. But bearing in mind, we're dealing with very sensitive information, and it's a new era that we're dealing with. I think we're trying to flesh out as we speak in now as to what we would like to see, what powers. Thank you, Jim.
The Honourable Van Wyk and the Honourable Spence.
I think I will leave it to the Honourable Honours when we get to 21 and 22 to talk further on this issue. But I think the issue of oversight becomes important. What do we do when the Auditor General says something about the department? What follows? It's the same question. And I think we mustn't forget that this report is going to be a public report. It's going to be tabled to Parliament, and there will be responsibilities for the oversight committees on those departments as well, to take certain actions and to take the necessary steps. And if it means calling in the minister, calling in the DG, then so be it. I don't think we must shy away from our own responsibility as Parliament that will come with this annual report. I just wanted to stress that point, that there definitely is a role for the committees of those departments that will fall under this legislation.
Honourable members, before I get to the Honourable remember what you have been doing throughout these few months. You have been arguing here vigorously that the head of the organ of state is the person that should be responsible for the classification. You've also been arguing very vigorously that if he delegates that power, it should be to a very senior person. So your systemic concerns is going to be restricted to one or two people that's going to be responsible, and one would expect that if the head of the organ of state didn't get the lessons in 101, that perhaps the remedial process would be to give him the lesson in 202. But it's going to be restricted to persons. This is not the organ of state that is going to be responsible for the systemic problem. It would be the person that is responsible for the classification. Even if he has delegated it to his DDGs, he's ultimately the one that is going to check the level, whether everything has been done properly, and the value that he puts in what his delegates have been doing is going to be where the problem is going to lie. If he has overlooked at the thing, or if he hasn't understood the law properly, is the answer not in that he is the person that needs to come, and there needs to be an assessment needs to be done of him or his, those that are doing the classification, to see how that systemic problem has arisen. I just thought perhaps you want to think about Honourable Smuts and then the Honourable
Thank
Partners.
You. Yes, no, that it was useful for you to remind us that we will at the end of the day now be talking about a very few people. But when I described a problem as being systemic rather than a single instance of misclassification, I meant systemic in the sense that persons, however few, or however many, but however few, might be practicing a form of classification which ends up in all of their work suffering from the same defect, and then you've got a systemic problem. I just wanted to come back after Steve, because he is talking about exactly what I'm talking about. There is a difference between administrative review and mere oversight. And we must decide clearly which one it is we wish to have. We put in the review. We would like proper review. The citing the example of the Chapter 9 is useful, as Annelies has done and as Steve has done. But let us not forget this. A Chapter 9 institution is not a court of law. Repeat, not a court of law. The only one of those bodies which has real power and with real decision-making consequences is ICASA, the communications regulator. It is a regulator. The others are no such thing. Their impact and their effectiveness rests firstly on moral suasion, really, but their own standing in society. When Jody Colopin, now Judge Colopin, and Leon Wessels and Kathy Govender were running the Human Rights Commission, they had enormous force and impact. They have no teeth, but that is not what they were ever supposed to
have or be. The IEC is superbly successful, but their job is to manage and run elections. They have an electoral court which sits to make decisions. Mr. Nombembe, wonderfully successful, but the Auditor General, and that's such a useful example, effectively points to the problems, and SCOPA is there to pick them up. I'll tell you the thing that's missing in South Africa now. It should be enough for bodies like the Chapter 9s to name and shame, because that is effectively what happens. The Auditor General says this department is qualified, and there is to some degree embarrassment about that. But Tuli Madonsela says, you acted unlawfully, you acted in that way, the executive should take action. Now, the way this is supposed to work, Tuli does not have binding powers, and I think she wants some, but a public protector is not a court of law. You can't make binding decisions. I, for one, would be, we are thinking about it a bit, but I am very reluctant even to contemplate giving any of these bodies the powers of a court of law or a tribunal or an administrative review tribunal. And what ought to happen in a healthy democracy is people must mense moet skaam kry dat hulle bedank on the spot. A minister, it's the way we've written the constitution for parliament and for the executive as well. We conduct oversight. When we find a minister lacking, that ought to be enough. When a minister has practiced maladministration, let alone null pheasants and this and that, they ought to resign out of shame. We will not ever, and we did not, and we will not ever write in a provision that says, when you fall short on being held accountable, somebody now trots off to the Supreme Court down the road and has you removed from office. It's not how it's supposed to work in politics. There ought then to be enough political pressure for them to disappear. But so what we are after here is something more than, you can make it an oversight body. I'm sure it will play a role, sort of a toing and froing between these few persons, as Cecil says, who really will be classified. But it is much stronger to make it a review, an administrative review body. Then you must clothe it with some form of power so that they can in fact say this is a misclassification. Either they do a toing and froing between the classifying authority and report to Parliament, that's closer to the Chapter 9 model, or they have powers of review. And that's why I keep asking the question, what happens if classification falls short? Do they formally set aside, as a court of law in fact would do? Are they in fact going to be a little review tribunal or not? That's the real question.
Faced with a real situation, Chair, where the panel, having made that finding, there's no malfeasance that's being hidden. It's just he is saying, I believe this document must be classified top secret, and the review panel is saying, no, it shouldn't even be classified confidential. Now, in that situation, Chair, we would need to think about how we deal with that. Maybe what is provided for in the appeal procedure may go some way to solving the problem. Because there it says if a request is denied for declassification, then an appeal is made to the minister. And we were going to come forward with an added step in that particular clause that brings in the power of the judge. That's 25%. But whether it deals with this particular scenario we've been discussing, I can't say, Chair.
Honourable, you're correct. What I was trying to show is two separate issues here. Here you've got a body that we say is going to be an oversight body from the Honourable Lawrence's view, where in its oversight activities it finds not that there's been overclassification or underclassification as was the discussion over the past half an hour, but they actually discover that there is a crime being committed in all of this. The crime has been hidden, which is not what you were talking about. In that case, the thing must go to the relevant authorities. There's no problem here. Not improper classification. Because improper classification.
Implications of that, where one specifically says the
I'm saying that's why we have under constitution an appointment of a special review panel. We've got APC. If we're serious about having APC, let us be serious about having APC. What we're discussing now is showing us how in the past or even currently, or even now as we're sitting here, we normally appoint people and we don't take serious responsibility of whether they do the work or not. We can't specify APC and still be asking ourselves in case. Otherwise, we're going to have a cake that has got so many layers and layers of a layer above the other layer and a layer, it will fall. Let's stick and be very vigilant about APC and really work on it. I really agree with this man. I agree with Comrade Smith. We need to be very serious about why we said at least one member must be expertise on this and that and that. They must do their work. They must do their work and we must be very honest and be strict on them. Thank you.
Okay, we must obviously bear in mind it's a double-edged sword, because similarly, the review panel, who's a very small panel, could say to a organ of state that classifies a document confidential that this document must be top secret, and we've got to live with that. We've got to live with the implications both ways. So we just need to understand that. But I'm trying to, my colleague that said layer upon layer upon layer, once that panel, the review panel has then taken a decision, I think Mr. Landers pointed to some reference to the appeal, is that the end of the matter? Is that recourse then?
So there.
our findings are that this thing has been incorrectly classified. And telling them to classify it.
Avenue then for a dissenting organ of state is to then say, well, you are
council not to give the head of the organ of state an opportunity 10, 15 days to consider to make representations, failing which the thing becomes binding? Yeah, that's just a concern. But you need to give the organ of state an opportunity to be heard on the matter. So you need to say at least, that decision once taken, the head of the organ of state will have 10 days or 15 days, whatever it is, to make representations, failing which the thing becomes binding. And the representations then will be considered in the same way once the review panel has re-looked at the thing. The thing is then enforceable as you say.
When the panel looks at a document and it's incorrectly classified, it could ask the organ of state to say, give us sufficient reasons, and if you don't, if they are not sufficient, it will be binding. It will become a binding decision. So you do have a form of audi autrum partum. You also then ask for further information about the reasons for that level of classification.
Members, because we want to give the state law advisor some homework. Is there, we don't want to send them to go and do the homework on a matter in which we don't agree. So can we ask them to look at the redraft, adding something to that effect?
Is actually coming out very nicely between the ANC and the rest of us. But really, I'm looking for a little opinion.
Shall we adjourn for a few minutes, Honourable?